The Protect Your Neck Podcast, UFC 209 After Party Edition. We've been drinking, y'all been warned.
You got that thing that I've been looking for. Been running around for so long. Now I got you, I won't let you go. You got that thing that I've been looking for. And you got a heart full of gold. And that's really turning me on. You are, you are, you are, you are, you are everything that I dreamed of. Now I can paint a picture. You are, you are, you are, you are, you are making my life much greener. Yeah, yes. Just say you feel the way that I feel. I'm feeling sexual, so we should be sexual. Just say you feel the way that I
Oh, I almost just want to keep this song playing, man. Best walkout song of the night. All the controversial opinions we'll be getting into. This is the best walkout jam of the night. And this is the Protect Your Neck Podcast, After Party Edition. As you heard, we've been drinking. You've been warned. As usual, these are recorded right after the fight, so we've only watched once and we've been drinking. So that is like a clear pass for us to like commit whatever crimes and say whatever we want, right?
Forgive us.
Exactly. That forgive us comes from my man, my partner in crime, one of my best and longest friends in world and life itself, and who I watch the fights with, Brian Schoonover. Say what's up, my man.
How you doing?
We're all doing good, I guess, but according to Twitter, we are all at war, and I definitely had my strong opinions, although you can, again, like I just said, you can kind of put the disclaimer, it doesn't matter. People are going to come at you hard, and that's fine. So I almost feel like I'm just trying to temper people's two-way opinions, but we will get to all the controversy that has happened. But that's Benjamin in the background. Yes, we're at my buddy Brian's house, but Benjamin, my dog, he still has a way of finding his way into the podcast. You heard of Melez Angelo Reyes on the UFC Houston breakdown, and Benjamin is back in the house. Yeah, he did, as Randy Couture like to call it, chemical warfare on us.
He just leaves a little bomb and just goes, just scurries away. It's like, here, smell this. How you like that? Anyways.
That might have been a bit of a too personal glimpse of what it's like to grapple with Randy Couture when he uses the term chemical warfare, because that man's savage in the best ways possible. And there was a lot of savagery tonight, my man. We're going to break it down from top to bottom. That's what we do here on the Protect Your Neck Podcast. We break down high-level MMA beforehand, and we do it under the influence after the fact, after party.
Some adult beverages.
Yeah, some keyword, right? Okay, so I guess we'll just start from the bottom of the card. A disclaimer, I didn't see much. I'll get into what I kind of saw, and I believe you didn't see much of the undercard, so I'm sorry, folks. But Brian, what did or didn't you see the undercard? Because we're both in the same boat.
I saw the Elkins. Okay. Highlight.
Yeah. Good one to see.
Yeah.
Yeah, we'll get there. We'll definitely get there.
And then I heard my roommate talk about one of the fights, but you have to remind me on who the name was. Alcantara fight versus...
That was a good one. We'll definitely get into those. Later on in the fight, I'll have harder opinions because of what happened and also because of how much I watched. I had a little cable provider issues and real life stuff come up in the house. So I kind of got stifled in the beginning of this card. I did not see much of the Morales versus Sukumta. I heard it was a close decision that could have gone either way. My heart goes out to you for those who took the dog on this fight, because even though I didn't pick Sukumta, I didn't play Morales, even though I picked him and he was the favorite. For reasons like I stated in the breakdown show, you have one debutante and another guy with his back to the wall. Without getting into the technics, because I didn't watch the fight and you heard my technical take prior, so it kind of wouldn't make any sense to go into it now. I can't talk to you much about that, but heart goes out to you on what I heard was a close fight. The next one, though, yes, we were referring to the entrance music earlier, and hopefully I was able to get that up, because, man, it was awesome. We had Tyson Pedro, who, you know, even he was fighting me and Brian's, friend Khalil Roundtree from back in the day. We stopped to appreciate that entrance music. You know, we can appreciate good music, being former, Brian more than me, more of a music expert and into that world. But me and Brian have both been in bands, and we appreciate some good music and some good jiving. He came out. But I had Paul Craig here, man. I had the Scotsman. Yep. I know you had Craig Big as well. And, Did you watch the fight, though? Because you said you played
for it. I did watch it, yeah.
Okay, tell me your take first. Let me hear your take first.
He looked great, man.
Okay.
I mean, you know, he absorbed some punches, gave some punches back, but for the most part, he controlled it. I feel like he dominated that.
He did, and the one thing that I was kind of worried about with Craig is that he kind of keeps his head upright, and even though he wasn't showing improvement in the pad work that I saw, because again, if you guys listen to the last podcast or follow me on Twitter, you know that the little bit of fight interviews I did do for Fight Week was with Paul Craig and Mark Godbier. I went with my homie, MMA Jim, shout out, at Jim Edwards, MMA Jim. Yeah, we went down to the Vanderlei Silva gym, and speaking gym, like all the gyms there, and yeah, Paul Craig, man, he had that attitude intangible that served him well, more so. He showed a little bit of cleanup on his technique, because if you watch his earlier fights, he's a little bit sloppy, but it was just his craft and his will, determination. He's able to perform when it counts as far as locking up submissions and knowing when to put his hips in and squeeze chokes, etc., etc. I thought he was going to be able to do it here given the opportunity, but he wasn't going to have... I was worried about him being on bottom because Pedro is a really strong top game guy, and we saw that.
He's living up to the hype so far.
Yeah, and I
saw... Survived that monster punch by Khalil.
He did, and Paul Craig, like you said, dude, he was doing really good. He was looking really impressive early, but I have to go back and watch it. Dom Cruz did a really good job with the commentating. He was emphasizing all night on the points of overhooks and underhooks, particularly against the cage. Underhook, obviously, is a great leverage point, but more than that basic fact, Dom was emphasizing that the underhook is a great leverage point when you are being the person pressed against the cage and you're looking to reverse.
Yeah.
It works more effective than an overhook. I love overhooks from the guard and other positions, including the clinch as well, but it is a dangerous proposition. And although I love the wrist feeds that Paul Craig was going through where he overhooks with one hand and then he uses the opposing hand to feed the opposing fighter's hand, you know, his into the overhooking grip hand. So essentially, you're delegating double duty to your overhooking hand. Not only is it overhooking one arm, but you're feeding your opponent's opposite hand and wrist into that overhooking arm. So you're killing two birds with one stone. I hope that made sense. I know we're audio here. But Craig was looking for that, but too much, like Dominic Cruz was saying. And that's a common culprit for taller fighters because naturally, you don't need an analyst to tell you this. If you're a taller fighter for your division, you are naturally going to be giving up underhooks more, right? If you're a good grappler, just because the physics isn't working your way. You're going to be facing, if you're a tall guy, you're going to be facing guys shorter than you. They're going to have a little bit of a beat and an edge for underhooks, at least inherently. You know, techniques and speed, that's a whole other issue. But we saw that play out here. So he was giving that too much. Tyson Pedro was able to land a really brutal shot off Paul Craig that was able to kick the party started. And I saw people complain about the stoppage. It wasn't satisfying in the definitive sense. But anybody that knows anything about position, he probably wasn't going to be able to get out of there. I don't think that as much as I respect Paul Craig, in a judge's perspective, or in a referee's perspective, they have to judge safety first, which I agree.
Yeah.
But you can't give Paul Craig, and I'm going to use this because this is the same position, the same respect you give a guy like BJ Penn, where Matt Hughes, BJ Penn 2, UFC 68, BJ Penn's first TKO loss, he was caught in that same crucifix position, eating those same elbows. And John McCarthy, you know, it wasn't even as brutal for Matt Hughes as it was from a guy who should be fighting arguably at heavyweight in Tyson Pedro, you know, delivering brutal elbows. So Paul Craig's a young guy. He's an undefeated fighter.
He'll recover.
He took a sabbatical from his teaching job, by the way, which killed him, you know, for just these next six months, see how far he can go. There's no sense in taking that big gamble with his life and having to gamble his health on top of it. I have no problem with the stoppage for that. And I had Craig.
Because he would
have
ate it for a while.
Yeah, and we both had Craig, and we both agree with that.
Definitely.
Okay, moving on. We went to Mark Godbier, the other gentleman that I saw this week.
Definitely missed that fight.
Versus Daniel Spitz. I saw in and outs of this. I was kind of taking care of my dog and eating and, yeah, anyways. regular around the house stuff. Was kind of settling in from some chaos. But Mark Godbier, by the way, salt of the earth, you know, very simple dude, comes off as, and I mean that in a positive, complimentary way. Yeah. But just like, I mean, he's just seems like a genuinely nice dude. Like, he doesn't realize he's a heavyweight fighter when he's talking to you. Like, that's the kind of ego that I like, and I know you're a guy who is sensitive to egos as well, so I know you appreciate those type of things as well.
A lot of big friends, yeah.
Absolutely. And Godbier had that. I was rooting for him to do well. And he had a lot of anxiety. I know he was really upset about his last fight from what he was telling me earlier this week. But it wasn't like the upset, Brian, like I was saying in a show earlier, where like you'll hear guys, and I'm sure you'll think of a lot of examples, audience listening, and Brian yourself, where they have a loss, and you can tell that it's bothering them too much. Where it's their next fight, and they're still talking about the past guy. Yeah. And whether those guys win or lose those fights, a lot of times we see a different fighter, right?
Absolutely.
But
sometimes for the better, but yeah, sometimes not.
Absolutely. And I wasn't worried about Gabir because the way he was talking about it was right. He was really focused on the moment. But, you know, obviously maybe there could be some adjustments made to that. We're all different. The best fighters in the world, that you would be surprised, people, if I told you, had a lot of anxiety before they went out to battle. And
Donald Cerrone's a big preacher on that.
Absolutely. Yeah. And Mark Gabir, and Mark Gabir was admitted of it. Apparently, he went to, I'm telling, you know, to you as well, Brian, he went back in press row, and right after the fight, was admitted, like, man, I was scared, you know, and I was having nerves. And
Jesus.
Yeah, and you know, it's just I like that honesty though, and yeah, I picked Gabi here because Spitz essentially was coming in last minute, was taking body shots that were affecting him, and I think lost him the momentum of the fight, which is ironic because, you know, as people know, I mean, I heard it at least on the Heavy Hands podcast. Shout out to Heavy Hands, Connor Rebush and Patrick Wyman, two analysts I have a lot of respect for, and I'm sure if you're listening to this, you probably follow their content. Go ahead and follow it. It's hard for me to listen to podcasts, but that is one that I do try to listen to, and I've heard them speak on Rick Little before, and essentially, Brian, Rick Little is the former coach of Rick Story up in the Pacific Northwest area, and we love the Pacific Northwest, we do, but Rick Little, he's a little controversial coach, in case you don't know, and a lot of the listeners may know this already, but for brevity, in case of those who don't.
Is that the guy, sexual harassment stuff?
No, I mean, it could happen too. No, but he's the guy that says body shots essentially are for wimps, so he instructs his tighter fighters to toughen up rather than working defense. Yeah, and you know that I'm a big proprietor of the body shot.
Stop being a pussy and just eat it?
Yes.
Yikes.
And, you know, so, you know, and so it's not surprising to see these tough fighters like Sam Cecilia almost die by their shield. Ooh. Working under a guy like that. And surprisingly enough, Sam Cecilia worked, even though he had Rick Little in his corner, worked with another camp. Too, yeah. This next fight, yes. Absolutely. Again, I'm not trying to turn this into a Rick Little thing, and this is just cited speculation, so take it for what you will. Mark Gabir gets the win. And on to Yuri Alcantara versus Luke Sanders. You didn't see this, but what you were saying? Your roommate said he was watching this one?
Oh, I just walked in the house, I got home from work, and I just heard my roommate say, oh man, it's over. This guy's bloody as fuck. He's not really a huge MMA fan. He just occasionally watches it. So it's funny to hear his take on things. So his opinion of it was, oh, it's over. This guy's bloody. It's over.
Okay.
And then all of a sudden it switched to the leg lock finish.
Well, here's what happened. Yuri Alcantara was, I believe he might have opened it a very slight favorite, which people thought he should have been a bigger favorite because his body work and on paper makes him, in my opinion, a deserved favorite of Luke Sanders. But the line was very competitive at a minus 115, and this could be because Luke Sanders looked good in his only one fight. That was a weight class up and on short notice, so much props aside from that being a debut. Top performance against a veteran like Máximo Blanco, was able to annihilate him with his left hook. But the thing was, I told people to bet, you know, I apologize for this because the fight was so even. A lot of people were hard on Yuri. But I told people, I mean, listen, I'm picking Yuri and I'm high on Yuri, but I will play devil's advocate because I agree with the line being a little closer. Sanders is a game dude. He has heavy hands, good takedown defense, well-rounded. Looks like he's on the uprise, and he's a southpaw, where Yuri Alcantara is a southpaw, and southpaws against other southpaws, we fucking hate it. It throws our game off, and Yuri Alcantara lacks volume and is dependent on southpaw techniques that are made for, you know, primarily, or at least have a high percentage against orthodox fighters as opposed to southpaw fighters, and he was facing a tough undefeated southpaw in Luke Sanders, okay?
Definitely.
So I told people, instead of betting the minus 115 on either guy, bet a minus 130 that this fight goes the distance. Luke Sanders on the uprise, he's the durable. And Alcantara has almost a 40-fight fucking sample size to pull from, and he's only been stopped twice. Wow. Once by knee bar, which he won, and even though Alcantara is a black belt, it was early in his career, and I tell people all the fucking time, just because you're a jiu-jitsu black belt in the gi doesn't mean you translate well to MMA. It's a complete different game. And in fact, and forget even MMA, gi to no gi, there's a difference. And what is one of the main differences? Well, let me tell you, my friend, leg lock. So that was one of his stoppages, no harm there. The other was a TKO. But again, it was early in Alcantara's career, and it was only by cut doctor.
No.
So I was like, the safe play here, just instead of minus 115 and fucking sweating your balls off, bet the 130. It's a bantamweight fight. The mathematical percentage is in your position to go for a decision. Anyways, I'm not trying to defend myself here. Yeah, I definitely was wrong.
It was a good fight.
But the interesting was, he played Turtle, and I'm a big Turtle guy. And Turtle is discounted in ground. grappling, and especially in MMA with strikes, because it's dangerous. You know, we associate turtle, especially if you're, even if you are a grappler, but especially if you're not, you associate turtle, especially in MMA, as a give up position, right? Almost like dropping to your back, like a failing position. Because we see people dropped, and what do? They drop the turtle to protect themselves. Yeah. We see it as a last resort, but if you do yourself a fucking favor and go watch Eduardo Tellez. Maybe I'm a goddamn hipster, but he's one of my favorite grapplers. He destroys guys from the turtle. He's a guy that could fight at 170, fights at 185, and he is a multiple no-gi and gi black belt world champion, Brian, who that weight class I just aforementioned would play turtle, the position that is a position looked down on from high-level grapplers to average MMA fans as a give-up position.
Some refs will look to stop the fight at a turtle.
Right. Eduardo Tellez was so dominant at turtle that you can look him up on YouTube right now, people, and you will see Gabriel Gonzaga, a heavyweight Brazilian jiu-jitsu world fucking champion, an MMA phenom, you know, maybe not anymore, obviously, but in his day, give him credit, people. And this is like footage from like when he was in his prime. He is like, and not only him, but many other high-level grapplers, Eduardo Tellez would turtle, and people would be in grappling matches, like treating him like he's on fire, like touching him for a second and just pacing and circling around him, worried about how they're going to engage this guy.
Nice.
And as a guy who's a fan of Turtle, I was really frustrated because even though I'm high on Yuri, you know, it's fair. You know, again, it's a complete different style he comes from. I don't know his lineage, but if we're just stereotyping from gi jiu-jitsu to maybe not just no gi, but a cash wrestling-centric jiu-jitsu that I was lucky enough to come from, where I was lucky enough to have a teacher who emphasized enough Neil Melanson on turtle positions, where how to set up
your favorites.
Yeah. I mean, you know, just creating space on how to move on turtle while protecting yourself from hooks and strikes to re-swim for an underhook and come up like Jorge Rivera and God, I'm blanking out on the fight, but it is a fight that got him the fight against Michael Bisping. You would see Jorge Rivera drop to the turtle, like I said, because he was dropped from strikes, not because Jorge, you know, Rivera is a Muay Thai guy. He's not even a grappler, and he's definitely not a turtle player, but he would drop to turtle when he would get hit to protect himself, and what he would do is he would fight hands, swim for the underhook, and safely stand to a clinch, break, and reset, and was able to fucking save himself in that fight. And I'm sorry I'm not, you know, remembering that fighter's name, but that's not important. It's the example. And, anyways, Alcantara was not doing any of those things. He wasn't working for his Petersons. He wasn't re-swimming his arms in. He wasn't even, like, you know, diving and abandoning his ship and just diving to a half so he could at least have an attempt to work a deep half for jiu-jitsu or re-wrestle up to a single if that was his propensity as a grappler. He was doing none of them. And it was really frustrating, and he was taking shots, and he's giving guys who wave the flag of the turtle position, like myself, a bad name, because every time you do this, you know, coaches will tell you, you're gonna get fucking hit, and all they're gonna have to do is point to fights like guys like Yuri Alcantara just resting in turtle, you know, and it was really frustrating. Yeah. And, but what Luke Sanders did, and you can make the argument this fight shouldn't have gone that far, but What Luke Sanders did to give, you know, I didn't see anybody touch on this, but essentially he rolls for a leg lock, like you said, Brian. It's an amazing roll, and it's a very hard route. Like I was saying, from Peterson rolls to re-swimming to sit-back sweeps, these are much more easier options. If you're, I don't expect much people to be familiar with those, so I'm sorry. It's in a very eccentric grappling style that I'm citing, and I'm expecting you to know. I understand that. I have a strong opinion here. Forgive me. But he was doing none of those. But what Luke Sanders did give him, though, is when you're riding a guy from a turtle position, whether you're looking to strike or whether you're looking to take his back, whether this is MMA or grappling, you cannot put your leg, if your opponent is turtled, you cannot put your leg between his. That is a rule of thumb for where a guy can do a front flip roll into a leg lock, essentially, thing. And Yuri was able to do that because Sanders put his knee in between Alcantara's leg. Mm. That's what gave him the position there. Wow. Sorry, I ranted way more long on that fight than
no,
I needed
to. No, it's great.
To,
no, I saw the highlights, so I know exactly what you're talking
about.
Yeah,
but it's
yeah.
A, but that, I didn't see anybody on Twitter point that out, and that is something that, again, maybe I've been a little too high. I've definitely got to knock myself down. Maybe I'm too self-deprecating if you have friends like Brian here. Jesus. For my own good, but I will fucking wave my flag on that horn. I'm one of the few fans of Turtle out there, and that's what went wrong there. I'm excited to see Luke Sanders, but that was a crazy fight, man. Crazy fucking fight. Next fight was even fucking crazier, dude. Darren Elkins versus Mirsad Bektik. Before I go, I want you to give me your opinions on this fight, Brian.
So I work with a kid who is recently getting into MMA. All
right.
And he asked me about Elkins for a bet, and he said, what about Elkins? And I said, well, Elkins has definitely won some upsets.
Okay.
He's definitely good at pressuring people. But he doesn't have that live underdog, I'm going to finish this guy. Man, did I eat my words tonight. It was intense. I just heard my... I actually got a text from a friend, and he said, what a knockout. And I was like, what? There's no way Elkins got KO'd. That guy's a tank. He can eat anything. And yeah, good enough. Wow. I mean, when's the last time we saw someone fall like that after a KO?
Poor guy. Was crazy, was man. This is why I couldn't... This is like tempting, even though it's what the line was maybe arguably overpriced, and it certainly skyrocketed to be overpriced under everybody's book when you had Mirsad Bektik as a plus 600 favorite.
He was a... But, or minus 600?
Oh, yeah, minus 600 favorite. Yeah, and that and it kept climbing after that, I believe. I stopped tracking the line.
Against Elkins, too?
I didn't play it in the first place, Brian. Even early in the week, it was too high for my taste at, you know, minus 500 neighborhood.
Yeah, I mean, he's a live dog, but
I mean, that's not that has no place on a three-man parlay. And if you're going by the 3-5 rule, which is still risky, and by the way, show me who won a fucking parlay tonight with the upsets, by the way. But parlay...
Don't even talk about parlays.
I'm sorry. Exactly. Well, that's what I'm saying. Kidding. Like, who won a parlay? Yeah. Like, there's no matter how good your picks are, how good your reads, like, we were all wrong on this. And that's what we expected, though, because everybody's picks were everywhere.
I had a guy who didn't follow the 3, 5, and 7 rule. He did a 4-man parlay and would have won a 3-man.
He would have won the 3-man.
He put Cooper in out of nowhere.
No female fights. No, yeah, we'll get to that soon. Those swings are like heavyweight fights. And I spoke to Mirsad on MMA Junkie Radio this week. Shout out again, George, and goes, thank you guys for having me so much on your show. Those guys do way too much for me, and they are the longest lasting, consistent motherfuckers in the game. Respect, bitches. Respect. And also big shouts to MMA Kelton for having me on his show. And the rest of y'all for just being supportive motherfuckers. John Ramdean and Robin Black for coming on my show last time. Hopefully y'all enjoyed that. That was a real treat. Ramdean's a mother. He's like our buddy Sean, dude. He plays guitar like Sean too, which is funny. This is an inside joke. I'm sorry, people. John Ramdean from the Fight Network looks just like me and Brian's buddy Sean, who used to play guitar in my band. And I was talking to Ramdean. He plays guitar in a band, you know, with the Fight Net guys.
Sean's
so it's hilarious.
Right weirdo too. It's great.
Oh, they are perfect. Yeah. I love it. And then we meet in a complete complimentary sense. Anyways, Mirsad Bektik on the MMA Junkie Radio Show was talking to me. He reminded me of a GSP, and that's very cliche to say, but not in his style, but his attitude. Like, he was doing the right thing. So I was talking about him because I have MCL, PCL, and knee injuries, and I was talking about that psychological thing. I'm like, man, I'm tapping past the knee bars. Obviously, you're a pro. You're way past that stage, but like, you know, did your confidence grow? And he said all the right things, man. His confidence did grow after that, you know, long layoff from the surgeries. He beat Russell Dunn in 204, if you remember, on Bisping Hendo card.
Yeah.
And everybody had him to win. I had him to win. Don't get me wrong. I didn't see any of this coming. Anybody who tells you they saw Darren Elkins winning this fight, much less by head kick KO, is full of shit. Grats on you, by the way. No hate.
Impressive.
Yes.
KO.
And no hate, by the way, on anybody who played Darren Elkins. In fact, I have the biggest amount of props to you people.
Well, you know,
I wish I did.
Like I said, there's a lot of fights where he won an upset, whether it was just a boring decision or not. Still won these upsets.
And if anything, it makes me feel dumb for not playing him, because I just told y'all, even though I picked Bektik, I didn't play him for this reason. For that reason, when there's somebody that you're clearly staying away from, and there's clear beneficial, I hate that word, value, like my man Joey Odessa in Costa Rica, which we're going soon, always says, you know, value is kind of a weird word in MMA. You think they can win or not, and that kind of hits home with me. But that's true. There was a lot of value in that Elkins line, and I could have justified playing it, and it would have paid off. So props to you who did. I did not see that, which I said was reminiscent to Holly Holm's KO of Ronda Rousey. It was kind of one of those push feeds off the break, which I love. Kicked him in the face. What I will say, though...
Kicked him right in the fucking...
Here's what I wanted to point out of this fight. This was the same round as the third round. I think it happened early on. But Rogan did a good job of you saying, like, hey, he's giving him a chance, Elkins a chance, into this fight. Him and Rogan and Cruz, to their credit, they were kind of calling the upset. They weren't calling that, obviously, but they were saying that Elkins is a grappler, and Mirsad Bektik is using his breaks, as Dominic Cruz said, to grapple with him, which is a mistake. And Rogan, inadvertently, not in my words, of course, because he has much better things to do than listen to my dumb ass, but kind of like my Tony Ferguson theory, as in presenting opportunities that were false. Like, people, oh, Tony's going to fold his back and this and that, and to give up position. And I said, well, he's a presenter, and I have this whole thing on it anyways. I did another podcast. But I don't think Darren Elkins is that crafty where he's a presenter. But if you present the man with an opportunity, which I think we all can understand, you know, because that has none of my code word involved, he will take it. And in those grappling, and you know, like I said, like Tony will Like, you know, I said, well, like in the presenter opportunity, I said, like early Nogueira would drop to a half guard or, you know, shoot a shitty shot. And a guy would be like, I just sprawled on him. I just won this battle. I sprawled on a shot. And it's like, no, you dumbass. You just engaged him in grappling because now he's diving into his deep half game. And now you have to fight him off and you're in too deep. You're on the floor. He tricked you, motherfucker.
Totally.
You know what I'm saying? So it's one of those presenting things. And so it was kind of cool to see, you know, even though obviously they're different people and have different takes. Takes that I respect highly, Cruz and Rogan. But it was
great
cool
to see him today too.
Yes, they did a much better job than before. I'm sure we can go back and criticize. I'm sure people are criticizing him, but I do think they did an improved job. Regardless of the fact, I like that they kind of called out the upset that was kind of subtly cooking over the pot, if you will. And one of the key transitions that, you know, may not have been that key because I believe it was a couple minutes before the finish, but it wasn't the same round. How I just kind of went on a big turtle tangent. One of my other big tangents, Brian, being a no-gi catch wrestling enthusiast, I fucking love the cradle. There's not enough cradles. When guys go for deep half, like I just the aforementioned Minotaur and Nogueira, you know how to shut out a deep half game? By the way, please just try this. It's something that I've been really trying. Maybe, you know, educate yourself on the near side cradle first. But when guys go like deep half on you, if you go near side cradle, you can shut them down. Like if you're not able to get a forearm in front of their face and kind of cross face them to kind of dissuade them from going under you and disrupting your base, allowing them into your base is, you know, if they already get past a certain point, then parlay them allowing them into your base into a cradle where you're cradling them in. It looks like professional wrestling. Mm. But it's great. You can start kind of locking your legs and locking them in position, working darces, or passing and kind of leg weaving like a Damian Maya into a dope mount or you know, a pass to the others to the far side of side control. Probably lost most of your non-grapplers. Probably lost maybe a quarter of you grapplers, but anyways, it's something that I really emphasize. It's gonna come into our next fight, but we saw that Darren Elkins was able to use the cradle, and even though he cradled Mirsad for a brief second in the scramble, it was enough to get the beat to move to his far side. In a scramble, one guy, no matter, okay, even if you're not a grapple, y'all can understand this. When there's a crazy scramble going on in grappling, one guy is trying to move one way, and another guy is trying to move the other, right? That's essentially what's happening. There's a thousand different variations of that, but that's essentially what's happening. So if you can move in your direction and continue your objective, but if you can parlay that move depending on the position, again, a thousand examples and intricacies that I'm not about to get into, but if you can parlay your offense with something that disrupts their offense, you're going to win.
Yeah.
There's a lot of positions, athleticism, speed, reaction times that factor in who's going to win inside of a scramble. But if you're focusing on the principle to not only am I going to go the direction I want, but I'm going to do so and disrupt this guy on the way, you're going to win that scramble. And a cradle is a good option to do that because it allows you to move from either side, the near or the far side of your opponent in the scramble. But if you're cradling them, you are controlling them. And that was a real key to making Mirsad work and allowing Darren to keep the clinch, which he inevitably got the finish from. Now, I spent probably a little too much time on that, so I'm going to jump in while we're on the cradle to Tibura versus Henrique. Did you watch this fight, Brian?
I did not.
You did not, and my memory's a little bit of foggy, but it was a bit of back and forth. Essentially, you had the kickboxing and wrestling base of Henrique, and he was a live dog here because he's like 23 or 24. He gets bigger every time we see him in the
Henrique's
octagon.
Henrique's the guy that got...
The Brazilian guy. He's the guy that lost.
Uppercut.
By Ngannou. He died. Ooh. Yes, yeah. That was the first time I realized Fight Pass. I was in Hawaii with my grandma's funeral with Cassie, and we're like sitting on the beach enjoying a nice breakfast, and I'm like... I'm a dumbass. I'm like, Fight Pass has a mobile app. Let me try this. Maybe I can actually catch some of these prelim fights. And I turn it on. Yeah, I didn't even see any of the fight before that. I didn't know who Francis Ngannou is at this point. And I just turn on my Fight Pass app while I'm at a brunch. And I just see him get decimated. And like I remember,
it was like a right uppercut miss, left uppercut slay.
And before I watched that, like there was this gnarly eggs. I'm an eggs Benedict fucking whore. Like I will, like you seen Bob Saget's character in Half Baked? Like you're a suck dick for Coke. Like that's me for eggs Benedict. Maybe not. Jesus Christ. But I remember I was so stoked to order this eggs Benedict, and then I pull up my phone, and I see that. After that knockout happens, the waitress comes up and she's like, "You guys ready to order?" And I'm like, "I just saw a guy get killed,
murdered." You know, those are the rare occasion where you see a KO and you go, oh, he's dead.
Oh, it's so good.
But, oh, he's murdered.
Yeah, sidetrack. But yeah, 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 the side tangent, absolutely. But Henrique's improved. He's won since then, Brian. And he was this was a close line. He's a very live dog coming against Tibura, who is, I don't want to say the poor man's Fedor because he's really technical, but he's got that composure. So I call him Hobbyist Fedor. You know, and he's got the round pudgy belly and this and that, right? Yeah.
Fedor, yes. How politically correct did you
Hobbyist
get?
Fedor. Okay, holy, so there we go. Shit, it's like hilarious. Making fun of the guy, but giving him credit at the same time.
Middle class Fedor.
There we go, middle class Fedor. And he kept his composure. He was doing really awesome things that people were like, oh, he had an underhook getup. Like, he didn't just hit an underhook getup. Like, he did the subtle things to make the frames, forearm frames. He framed space from being on bottom with side control to make space to underhook and to get up. He went to the aforementioned turtle, Brian, that Yuri Alcantara did. Except as a heavyweight, Brian, he showed much more urgency and techniques than an experienced bantamweight black belt.
Yeah.
Because Tibura went to turtle, he immediately went 2-on-1 with the hands. Because guess what, people? If you control one hand, you limit the strikes they can do, you limit the passes in control, and unless they have some crazy advantageous position, it's really hard to choke anybody with one hand, people. So if you're grappling, there's another thing. Trust me, wrist fighting, hand fighting, it does wonders. Stifling is an unsung hero in grappling. And Tibura used that to not just get out and get back to his feet, but to not use a lot of energy, whereas Henrique was. He was slowing down. He was getting desperate. And we saw Tibura capitalize on it, where he was able to get on top and mount him, Brian, and end up finishing with strikes. But everybody's, oh, it was a great mount, and it was a technical transition, and all that was beautiful. But again, I didn't see any, and I'm sure plenty of people noticed it that I probably, you know, don't follow or didn't see. So I'm not fucking some alone person on a mountain here. But just to bring up something that not a lot of people honestly bring up. And I'm a whore when it comes to cradles again. That's what I was building to, the cradles.
You're a whore.
And instead of the inside cradle that Elkins used to get to the back, Tibura had the outside cradle, which if you grapple, you know, feeds to a mount. Unless you're obviously a wrestler, that's not going to be in your repertoire. But we're not talking about wrestling, are we? We're talking about submission fighting, because submission fighting translates more into MMA fighting. And that's what we're breaking down here. So Tibura used the outside cradle to get that mount. And all that from there led to the finish. It was the cradle, motherfuckers. Respect the cradle. Respect my rants. I'm sorry. I'm actually not as drunk as I sound. I'm probably mailing it harder than I've actually been drinking here. But I'm excited about cradles, motherfuckers.
Dude, you love the grappling.
And I love
it. No one preaches it better. If these people could see what you're actually doing while you explain this, it'd make a lot more sense. But
I don't know about that. I will say one person that definitely does it better, just because I respect this man. I got to meet him this weekend, Brian, and that's Luke Thomas at SPN. Luke Thomas, my man from MMA Fighting. It was nice to have some Jim Beam, the yellow Western whiskey, but since it was comped, I guess we can forgive ourselves there, Luke. It was great meeting you, my man. Shout out while I refill this beer, and hopefully while you refill yours. We are going to take a quick break, and we will be back to knock out the main card for UFC 209 right here on the Protect Your Neck podcast. Here in the Protect Your Neck podcast for the main card recap of UFC 209. Hey, all right, Brian. Now,
minus the Diaz brothers. What the fuck?
I know. Me and you are a long fine friend of Adida brothers.
Jesus, man. How are you the UFC and you have the biggest fight in UFC history, probably Nate Diaz versus McGregor, right?
No shit.
And 209 has been spread all over the map now. John Anik got 209 tattooed on his arm. 209 is blasted, and it's the trademark of the Diaz brothers, and you don't even have one of them on there.
Dude.
You can't work out some kind of way to make that a main event. Even if it was just Nate Diaz versus anybody, if it was Nick Diaz versus anybody, it would have sold so many more pay-per-views.
Yeah, absolutely, man. Well, the UFC is not like that UFC that me and you were fans and just, you know, partying harder than we should have been watching fights back in the day. It's not that same UFC me and you came up with, which, you know, by the way, in case y'all don't know, Ryan isn't just like a normal super fan. I mean, the dude's been attending shows for over a decade live. I mean, I guess that would qualify him as an educated fan, right? But it's not the same days as he was watching it, or as I was watching it, or as many of you are watching it. In fact, one of the few staples of a card format, Brian, no matter what the main event, no matter what the opener was that a lightweight fight, my favorite division, was always going to open the main card, right? That was a Joe Silva special, right?
Yes, yeah.
But Joe Silva's not there. And you know what opened up this fight? Card, not Vanata Timor, which granted, there was shuffling that could have just, jacked this lineup up regardless, granted. But
spoiler alert, fight of the night, in my opinion.
Me too. We will definitely get there. But it was a heavyweight fight of veteran names that opened up the fight card. A little weird, but
that surprised me. It slipped my mind, you know. I was so used to the original lineup. I was like, oh no. I wasn't ready for it. I was definitely not ready for it.
Now,
I think I was only one beer in.
Absolutely. Now, obviously, for the prep work and setup, you know, not being cocky, I guess you could say I'd be your man for that. But to be honest, I got to tip my hat to Brian for this one. I picked Overeem, so I guess I was right. I'll just be first off to say that. But I was straight up, like, my heart was with Hunt on this one. I just couldn't pick him with the intangibles.
It's gutted, man.
Brian as well, his heart was in the same place, but even stronger, as he was very adamantly watching. Not only was he adamantly watching, and not that I wasn't, but like I've said many times before, you could put all these accolades on my side as far as what qualifies me for seeing things, but I'm always the first to admit when I admire or can admit when somebody is just really good at doing something and or better than me, and it doesn't matter who's better than who, but Brian, like I said on a previous podcast, is a really good kind of spotting the damage when someone's kind of hurt or momentum swings, even when he's been drinking in the live setting. I'm admittedly terrible. You know, I'm much more terrible at scoring and breaking things down when it's live and I've been drinking. So, Brian, tell me your take on this fight. Obviously, I kind of gave your hand. You had Hunt. But yeah. Give me your take on this fight, man.
Yeah, you know, those elbows were vicious, man. Like I said, it breaks my heart to see Hunt. It's such a fucking great guy get knocked out like that. But gotta give props to Overeem for the fact that this is the first time I think I've ever seen him get rocked. Do the Overeem stare at nothing because I don't even know where I'm at face. And recover.
Yeah.
Not only recover, but knock Mark Hunt out harder than he's ever been knocked out. You know, right before we started the podcast, I saw Ariel Helwani tweet about Overeem getting an IV. It was...
Yeah, I didn't know anything about that, by the way. You know more than me.
I don't know enough about that, okay. But...
You just saw the kind of headline?
I made a comment during the fight to a friend Johnny via text, and I said, I would not be surprised if Overeem pops hot, because that's really weird that his whole career, he's shown that wobble face, and then it's over. There's no recovery. Yet, in this fight, he gets wobbled a couple times, maybe, arguably, and recovers. Who knows if he even recovered,
Right.
To be honest. And not to sit here and say, you know, Overeem is still on something, but the IV thing makes a little bit more sense. No, hydrated him a little bit better.
It's bold. It's a bit tinfold hat, but it's very, very justified in the sense of what we've seen from the sport, what we've seen from Overeem.
Considering he just came from the worst KO of his career.
And again, you're not trying to take any credit. It's not like, you know, we're arguing about the decision or outcome. It's pretty damn clear what the outcome was.
It was the most impressive victory of his UFC career.
But. Yeah, but you know, as much as we try to temper these things and we don't, you know, there's much uneducating fans going off the handle with steroid or whatever accusations, but no, man,
steroids,
that, no, exactly,
funky.
Exactly. No, but that's even if you were that's still justified in my opinion. It's defensible. I'll give my take though, that aside, I don't know. We'll see. I mean, it's almost to the point where it's like, I feel like I'm Nick Diaz. Everybody's on steroids. Like,
yeah.
I'll just wait until they announce it before I condemn anybody. And then when they announce it, I'll be the last person that's surprised. That's my apathy. It's not very inspiring. It's sad. It's not right. It's very much apathetic, which I'm not a fan of. But yeah, it's my apathetic viewpoint as a jaded fan. That being said, calling the fight for what it is, though, you know, yeah, I did have Overeem. I thought it was going to be more like he was going to play it like Roy Nelson with the right hand avoiding it. And same as he was going to play it with JDS, although he was able to find his window of opportunity to finish the fight. And it ended up being kind of like I said, but kind of not, because it, you know, it was like I said, but at the same time, it ended up playing more like the JDS than the Roy, though, yeah. Because he did find that opportunity. It was in the clinch.
How much he was engaging.
Yeah, you were seeing that early, and me too, especially with the danger, and not just engaging, but he was engaging with not like your typical, like I explained, like the remember the Pearl Harbor, Michael Bay movie, got fucking terrible. Fuck you, Michael Bay. I haven't gotten my Michael Bay. One second.
About your Michael Bay.
I've now. This is, by the way, Protect Your Neck podcast
warning,
listeners.
Warning.
Yeah, warning, warning. You hear me love movies?
Dude, that was
you hear me talking about being Hawaiian?
Holy
you hear me being
shit.
A movie nerd? I fucking hate Michael Bay, the
God
racist
damn.
Mother. Oh, you got me started. Sorry.
Jesus, did
anyways,
you hear the vibe
oh,
switch
God.
There? That's
oh,
hilarious.
Oh, God, I fucking got fired up.
Oh, my God.
Fuck Michael
Talk
Bay.
About a trigger,
yeah, well,
Jesus.
Okay, put it this way. Michael, they were going to have an opening for the movie Pearl Harbor in Hawaii. And they canceled it because we had protests.
Oh my God.
Because yes,
we
there were if you were watching fucking Pearl Harbor, you would think that took place in Vermont,
oh my God,
not
so
Hawaii.
Good.
Okay, I'm gonna stop.
Oh
I'm gonna
my
stop.
God.
But the point is, one thing Michael Bay did good though, there was a really good bombing scene, and there was like these torpedo planes, and I kind of compare that to like a lot of Jackson Wink fighters because Winklejohn, I'm rounding it back. I'm calming down. I'm rounding it back. Like that.
Just like
Star Wars when they're assaulting the fucking the first one. I don't know, New Hope, whatever it's called. Stay on target. Stay on target. I'm that guy. I'm that John Goodman looking motherfucker just trying to stay on target. But back on target. Michael Winklejohn kind of has those guys. He has a lot of his fighters. They'll circle on the outside. And like Michael Bay and his bombing runs that he portrayed very well. See, I'm paying a compliment to Michael Bay in the movie Pearl Harbor.
Because, anyways.
Yeah, and he'll kind of run in and do these long shot attacks. But he wasn't doing long shot attacks like you were saying, Brian. He was engaging, right?
He was into it.
And not
yeah.
only was he engaging, he was like throwing leg kicks. And what's the counter to the leg kicks? Yeah. Right hands, left hooks, depending on the side you're being attacked, depending on the short range of leg attacks that Overeem was using. So he was playing with fire, right?
The confidence was weird, considering that in the Miocic fight, he was running. He was avoiding any kind of contact.
A lot more resetting or running, depending on how you want to look at it. But
I guess you're right.
I'm playing devil's advocate. I'm not arguing. I'm playing devil's advocate. No,
you're
it's
right.
fine.
No,
you're
it's
fine
great.
To say that.
It's a good opinion to have. But,
he was. You're correct. He was.
So, like I said, it was just surprising, considering, in my opinion, the two worst knockouts he's had were Antonio Bigfoot Silva and Miocic in his last fight. And the last one was brutal.
Right.
So I wasn't sure how he was going to come back. He didn't sound great in interviews coming up, in my opinion, and so, I don't know. It was good to see. But like I said, no bias here. That was a really impressive victory.
Right.
To be able to recover and brutalize a guy who is probably got the best chin in the heavyweight division, maybe in the history of the heavyweights.
Yeah. No, absolutely, man. And just kind of put a capstone on that. One of the things I said about, you know, Overeem's clinch, and I've kind of highlighted in breakdowns of him before. The reason why I believe he's one of the best clinch fighters next to Fabricio Werdum and Josh Barnett in the heavyweight division is because of hand fighting. And you heard me wax on about cradles and turtles, so why don't I just wax on, why don't I fill out my round up my top three, because you all know I love my fucking hand fighting, and I love stressing about that. And what makes a good quote-unquote ground and pounder or quote-unquote clinch fighter is a guy's hand fighting, okay? That's what opens up these strikes. That's what manipulates these openings, windows, these leverage points, etc. And you can see the feeds, the wrist controls, that Overeem, go back, watch the replay. I'm only doing this podcast off one watch, but this is one of the more confident things I'm about. And there were some beautiful things at play there, even though me and Brian were rooting for Hunt, but we got to give credit where credit's due. Good
Absolutely.
For Overeem on that,
yeah.
Regardless. All right, next fight. We'll keep this one short. Cavillo versus Cooper. I had Cooper, who opened as the favorite and ended up being a dog by the time this one closed.
Wow, okay.
Do you have any opinions before or prior past this one?
I don't even think I was in the room for this one.
Cool. This will make it a lot faster and less painful.
No offense to
the No. I really liked, you know, I almost wanted to change my bet. Not that it mattered because I didn't play either of them, which, you know, I suggest you doing too. Not just debutantes, but in the female 115 and even 135 division, you can make the argument.
It's harder to gauge.
Yeah, the sample size, the drawing pools are really small. They're very deceiving. So we're having fight, and plus, you know, statistically, the fights are going to decision, which means we're relying on judges, and we all love relying on judges when we're putting money behind fights, right?
Absolutely.
Oh yeah. Okay. So nothing more to say on that. Hopefully, you'll see more from Carvillo. She looked great there. Dan Kelly though, left hook Kelly.
Left hook Kelly? No, you said left hand.
Left hand Kelly versus left hook Larry, yes.
Yeah, and I said left hook Larry, and left hand Kelly.
Yeah, I didn't even realize. I was like, Brian's like, oh, you're coining something. And I really wasn't coining anything. But, you know, it's so funny because I was yelling like.
It was primal. It was a primal yell. You were knee slapping, hopping up and down.
Well, this was my dog pick where I wanted to slap myself because, like, I was literally, like, even after my analysis was done and I decided on the pick, after I read it, edited it, all the time to publish it, and after I went on multiple podcasts this week defending my pick, it almost sounded like I was making an argument for Rashad at certain points because I kept stressing all iterations of Rashad, past and present, should win this fight on paper.
But where is
period. It? But you know me, I hate red team versus blue team, and I am the motherfucker that taxes y'all with in-depth facts when it comes to these red team versus blue team arguments that are slightly off. And this was another one of those where I say, and it sounds cliche, but it's true, and these are usually my more accurate picks when I say I initially came in leaning one way, but I went the other. Those are my most accurate ones, as much as y'all might be getting sick of hearing that. And more importantly, it should tell you that, hey, you know, first of all, don't ever swear by my picks because that's the reason why I don't sell them. I'm just a reference point. You should be referencing other people like, you know, Wyman, Rebush, Black, Kelton, all these guys, whoever. Just get a big pool, whether you agree or disagree with them. It's nice and healthy to get a big pool, first of all, people. But yes, you know, I do pride myself a bit on picking these, you know, underdog picks where I think the line's off, hence Brian Barberina, my favorite underdog of last year.
Oh, Jesus.
But Kelly, I have no history. I have no room to top my horn here because Kelly, not only was I wrong on his last three fights, Brian, I told y'all to bet the house against him. I said, bet against Dan Kelly. Not only.
He's a pirate. He's working on one leg.
Well, not only is Dan Kelly not going to win these fights, which he won, the only way these bets don't cash is if Dan Kelly's knee blows out on the way to the octagon. In fact, if there's a house that opens that prop that Dan Kelly's knee will blow up on the way to the octagon, use that as your hedge.
I just love how Joe Rogan's like, so what's up with your knee? And he's like, oh, mate. It's fucking red. Just like, let me tell everyone who didn't already notice how wrapped my knee is that if you want to beat me, just kick the shit out of my leg.
Absolutely. And from his walking gait, it's so easy to discount him. But the one thing I did say, and the reason why I was getting so primal, as Brian alluded, is in my breakdown, and not just this, but on my other Rashad breakdowns, the one thing I noticed when I run him through the proverbial comb is that left hands are his common culprit, whether it's a southpaw karate fighter's cross like Machida, whether it's a wrestler, orthodox wrestler's jab like Bader, or it's a Brazilian killer's left hook like Teixeira. The left hooks have been common culprits throughout his long career, which, by the way, Rashad, by the way, only 2 years younger than Kelly, people, 37, and his last win was against his last definitive win, Chael Sonnen, who was on his way out, and even hindsight, even more so, right?
To be honest, I was kind of rooting for Rashad. I didn't really like Rashad early on in his career. Mm-hmm. I really actually disliked
him. A lot of people did, so that's fair to say.
Yeah, but he kind of turned the corner on him for whatever reason.
Me too.
A couple guys did him, Michael Bisping, a couple guys just for whatever reason. I got to like get to know them a little bit better through interviews and other random outlets.
I like that you said that, yeah.
Yeah, but, you know, it's respect to him, and, you know, it sucks to see a guy fall like this. Like I said, it's weird. We've been watching it for so long, and, you know, we kind of came in at a point where a lot of guys were leaving, and it was normal then. But then you watch your favorite fighters, and all of a sudden those guys are kind of just disappearing.
It's strange, right. Man.
It's a real strange time in MMA. But not in a bad way. You know, I like change. I like it, but like I'm saying it. So, was rooting for Rashad in a weird way, but, yeah, hopefully he ties it up.
You brought up some good points there, my man. And one, you know, again, my excitement, don't mistake my excitement here. It's not excitement for Rashad not doing well. It's more just kind of excitement for the underdog of all underdogs doing well and doing well in a particular way that I stated. Because I, like Brian, yeah, man. I mean, part of me have this weird thing where, like, you know, like, people on this podcast, now I was a BJ, I'm not a fight fan, I was a BJ fan, especially back in the day, right?
Yeah.
But, you know, I would not like these guys, like, Diego Sanchez was the kooky dude who was taking asparagus from fucking whatever, and I'm like, oh, I don't like, but when, you know, when I see these guys that maybe you dislike for whatever narrative you get fucking talked into at the time, I would end up liking these guys a lot more after. Not only that, I'm also, and Brian knows this, I'm someone who always has a soft spot for underdogs and old guys, which are inherently one and the same, right?
Yeah.
So for that.
And injustices.
Yes. And injustices. Yeah, and with the John Jones, oh, yeah, yeah. That too as well. But yeah, but I mean,
Michael Bay.
Oh, fucker! That's good. But there's definitely a soft spot, in other words, there that I've developed for Rashad as well. So definitely, please don't take it that way. But you know, I wasn't alone. There was plenty of people. Shout out to at Best Fight Bix, by the way. Listen to Half the Battle, my man Daniel Levy over there. You know, or many others. My buddy Goes, who I thought I was going to be on an island. It was kind of our inside joke on the MMA Junkie radio show where I was like, I'm going to be on an island here. And as soon as Dan Kelly won, instead of Goes tweeted me and goes, hey, who are we inviting on this island with us or something like that? It was nice, great. Because nice. He was on the Kelly train it's with true, me. Definitely. But that left hand is the reason why I was getting so excited back to the rounding, back to the original point. Oh, and he kept hitting excited. It. Well, he gave me plenty of reasons. He was only hitting him with it throughout the whole fight.
Yeah, we had a buddy here watching the fights, and he kept saying that he thought Rashad was winning. I was like, man, you're crazy. I don't know how many left hands you missed, but they've just been landing constantly.
Yeah, absolutely. And again, even though he has deceptively heavy hands, although this fight may not have shown it, I said it doesn't matter. He didn't like it because that's why I said it. Dan Kelly, even though he's deceptively heavy hands, and I will argue that, I said that doesn't matter because he doesn't need to knock out or necessarily even hurt Rashad. All he has to do is make him doubt himself because timing and speed are sadly the first thing to go. And when you're a confident guy who has been athletically superior as a wrestler or MMA fighter, a lot like the main event, it can be easy to rely on those tools that have served you well, which we'll get to. Did not work well for Rashad. We'll get to the other fight, but first there is one more in between, Brian. That is the co-main event. Your fight of the night, sir. So I'm going to let you kick off Lando Venata versus David T. Moore.
I'm a huge Reddit MMA guy.
All right.
And I'm on the hype train for Venata, man. I think that he's got a lot of potential. And Tamor definitely surprised the shit out of me tonight. I mean, you know, at first it was Venata's fight. He was controlling that whole first 2 minutes. But then he got countered with a left hand, and I saw it change. It shifted him. And he slowed down. He started backing up a little bit. And then it was all Tamor from there. I mean, no doubt, they definitely exchanged a lot, but Venata was not the same after those first couple of exchanges. It changed his whole momentum. Groovy was no longer as groovy. But it was a great fight, man. I mean, back and forth. Even to the final bell, it's great.
This was another one where you were very in tune with it, where there were shots where I thought I saw or I admittedly didn't see. And either way, I was kind of going off with your opinion because, again, that's one of the random, and it's a really random, weird observation, and it doesn't hold much water. But for what it's worth, you know, I have a big sample size to pull from watching fights with you. You've been more accurate than me, oddly enough, when it comes to in-time, live-time damage taking.
Watch people get knocked out for a long time.
Yes, in person and on TV. And so there was a lot of that. That was my biggest fear here. And first of all, let me come clean. I was one of the, I don't say nut huggers, because again, I'm one of those guys that love being the contrarian and, going against the grain. So I definitely don't think I was, you know, hugging nuts, but I was admitted that I'm a big fan of Venata and felt strong about him winning here. That said, even despite that, I still, supporting the original statement I just said, was one of the few saying, hey, everybody, even though I'm high on Venata like y'all and can bring the technical facts, there's some technical facts here that makes Timur a live dog.
Oh, yeah.
Not just, a live dog can be thrown around. Everybody's a live dog in MMA, right, Brian? But no, I actually stated that in my written breakdown, the podcast I was on.
Plus 370 or something.
Yep, and it was going to be specifically the left-hand counter. And sure, he followed up with the right hook with it nicely than he has before tonight.
Pretty sure in the first round, it was three left hands in a row that changed the momentum.
Exactly, sir.
Not right, like back-to-back, one, two, three, but it was three consecutive landed strikes.
And what was impressive, that I thought he was going to do it off the faint kicks, because if you watch Timur's Muay Thai, he doesn't have a clinch game, which I'm a big fan of. So that kind of, you know, downgraded him in points in my own personal book, because I like seeing Muay Thai guys with a clinch game for Muay Thai. Mm-hmm. And especially when you're talking about Muay Thai guys translating into MMA, it's a must.
He translated it well.
But, well, maybe he did show wrestling improvement, sure. But I guess the point that I'm pointing to is that he would be more in and out and aggressive. And he, you know, like I said, he developed into more, you know, of a counter fighter. But, I was impressed with the wrestling development. Sorry, I'm kind of all over the place here. But more importantly, I guess, you know, I was having this conversation with my buddy at John's Crazy Life, 3026 Breakdown. He did a cool thing. I don't think you saw it yet, but I was going to give it some love this next week after things cool down, but he did a How I Watch Fights, and it's cool. He'll take handicappers, breakdown guys, analysts, and he'll interview them on how they watch fights and this and that. And
that's a really cool concept. Yeah,
he did one on me, which was really appreciative. He kind of hit on some notes that we were joking about earlier tonight. I was going to tell you. I'm like, hey, my man actually put that in a funny video, so allow that to be his shout-out. But I was talking to him last night at Beer House. After weigh-ins, this is Friday night, you know, for those listening to kind of timestamp the episode, this is recorded, you know, on Saturday here. And he was, like, completely against, like, people being on Vanatta, and, you know, I love my man John, but he's definitely, you know, and I told him this, you know, the other night, he's definitely not afraid to be that dude with the strong opinions by those.
Yeah, I love it sometimes.
And, whether you agree with it or not, and I've told him when I agree with him and don't, you definitely gotta respect that. So much respect to you, sir, for that. But, I honestly like the guy. But that's something we were talking about. And one of the things he brought up was, you know, he wasn't on Vanatta. And you know me, man. I'm not just, like, a guy who's gonna, you know, agreeable guy or a nice guy, which I like to think that I'm a nice guy, but I don't want to think that I'm agreeable, because I will state my facts and my opinions, and I will stand by them. But I'm also good about, like, you know, hearing other people's opinions and incorporating them. And it comes in handy sometimes. And, you know, John said some great things where he was like, hey, man, I think we should slow down on Vanatta. And I'm usually that guy, which was kind of weird. So I almost felt guilty. But I was listening to those points. And aside from me feeling guilty, I'm like, no. This isn't my insecurity. You were making some really good points here, my friend. And, you know, he said, you know, he felt he was overrated. And I said, whether you're right or wrong, I don't necessarily feel he's overrated, but I do feel that Timur is underrated. I do feel that Timur is not a gatekeeper, that in fact this is the fight that's going to tell us more about Vanatta.
I think his call out of Northcote was what set him back.
Well, yeah. And he did. We'll get to definitely Timur's post fight, by the way. That was funny. Yeah. And I called that too, by the way, that he was going to have another awkward post fight. Post fight, right? But yeah, I mean, he. You know, I thought my call here, Vanatta, was by submission, because I felt that Timur, like I was just saying, was live on the feet. He's going to be live for the counter. And even though I'm a big fan of, you know, Brandon Gibson, and that Lando Vanatta was one of the, you know, the UFC level fighters of today who had actually been born and bred from him as opposed to Jackson or Wink. Very exciting, but I felt Vanatta was going to dust off the ground skills, his wrestling base, to get the submission finish. Because that, you know, people were like, oh, he's got a dog in him. And I'm like, you know, don't get me wrong. I don't think he's the complete disciplined guy. So I'm not arguing that he is. But I think he is disciplined enough where he's going to create enough chaos to get things going. But after either he hurts Timur or Timur at least tags him with a good shot, either of those two options, positive or negative, are going to hit that trigger to go, oh, yeah, this guy sucks on the ground. That's where I originally started being good at. Well, let's do that. Hence, you know, again, my John Lineker, TJ Dillashaw play, where I was surprised. Yeah. Where I'm like, did everybody fucking forget TJ Dillashaw was a wrestler and was actually a good submission grappler, and he's going against a guy where that's the clear path to victory? Yet nobody was on that shit.
Because he was that, and then he defeated one of the best strikers.
Right.
Undefeated for
10 years. Even though my submission prop didn't cash for Dillashaw, I was completely right in going that direction, because what happened? He took him to the ground.
Definitely.
He dusted it off.
And he matched those takedowns well.
Right, and I thought it was the same thing, where it's like, this guy is really good, but Timur's really good, but he's only really good in this one area. Vanatta has to be smart enough to see that, and even if he's not, because he's a weird dude,
he's a little greedy in that.
Look at his team, where he's coming from. Look at where the UFC and how his team holds him. Like, the UFC, his team, which is a good team, care about where this guy's going. They are at least not going to let him as far as preparation and intention. Ultimately, it's up to the fighter, of course, but for all these reasons, I thought that Vanatta was not only going to win, but by submission. That said, I scored it for Timor. I wasn't mad at a 30-27, although I scored it 29-28 for him. Doesn't matter. I still scored it for David Timor. Props to him.
Yeah, great fight, man.
Yeah.
Great performance.
Anything else to add to that? Anything you want to say on that weird post fight where he keeps, like, this was, by the way, the second time where he's ripped Conor McGregor with the vintages, baby.
I know, geez, someone brought it up. They're like, really? That's Conor McGregor's? Like, yeah, I don't know. That's a little weird. Like, I didn't know about his first one.
Was it because Timor's Swedish and Conor McGregor did it in Sweden? I'm looking way too deep into that, so I'm sure he didn't look too deep into that.
Way deeper than he's probably. He's just trying to be funny, I'm sure.
Yeah, he's just being Well, I'm not going to say the R word. I'm trying to make a stop at saying the R word, people. I've said it in the last two podcasts, and I've used the excuse that I grew up in the 90s, but no more. Actually, no one complained about it, so maybe I will still use it. Fuck it. Let's move on to the main event.
Just no Michael Bay talk.
Yeah, no Michael Bay talk. Sorry, you saw me get fired up.
Oh, dude, God. That was intense.
Another time. Another time for Technic Podcast. You wait. All right, main event. Time to get heated up for a different reason. Actually, not. I almost don't want to get heated up for this because Twitter turned into a goddamn inferno. We have Tyron Woodley defending his belt against Stephen Thompson. Before we get into it, Brian, let me just put this disclaimer before we both get into it. I had Thompson. I admitted that there was, you know, I admitted my Kenpo karate bias. But that being said, I also said my early lean was Woodley in this fight. That being said, I've picked against plenty of fighters I love, from BJ Penn, who the fighter that I just admitted for the, like, the umpteenth time that I love the most. Hey, I picked against that guy. Brian, you know how much I love Jim Miller. I picked against him a couple times, my friend. I can pick against fighters that I like. The only reason why I emphasize on Stephen Thompson is because not only are there not a lot of technical, you know, analysts out there, aside from some of the few that I previously mentioned. Props to all those guys. Love all and respect all those guys. But most of the analysis is mainly striking and not grappling. And within the striking, it's more boxing or Muay Thai. And that is the main predominant, not just in our sport, but in all sports that are considered combat sports, right? The rest fall under traditional martial arts. But guess what? Guess what? Lyoto Machida is not the only traditional martial artist to make his way to mixed martial arts or find success. We've had a few. And yes, as somebody who used to teach and I hate even saying the fucking word black belt, as you really see me hear me beat around the bush. But yes, I fucking earned myself one. I can talk about it.
In the Shaolin Temple, you shared that regard with that Dan too. Hardy, the man.
Yes, even though we didn't know each other and had no business knowing who each other were. But we were at the Shaolin Temple in China at the same time. That being said, it's an underrepresented category. So even if I hated fucking Stephen Thompson, I would still feel the same duty to represent that martial art. So that bias is stated. Secondly, I was somebody who, kind of like Brian said about Rashad Evans, I was not a big Tyron Woodley fan. I would be honest, and I was happy when, like, guys like Roy McDonald maybe beat him, and not because of, like, a personal thing, because, like, you know, I'd be rooting for one fighter or the other. Like, it's not a personal thing, but I can admit that I've rooted for against other fighters in the past. That said, Tyron Woodley, and I've said this before, this isn't just me saying it now, is a guy I've gained respect to, and we don't have to get into this dark race talk or whatever, my friend Brian, but and I definitely have my problems with certain things about it, but within that whole context of him not being afraid to speak out and the personal things and kind of watching back to see how guys like Rogan, who I like, by the way, but Rogan had called his fights very fucking unfairly. And again, as somebody who as a kid would fucking cut out newspaper articles of basketball fights, would be that weird 8-year-old that was excited for the NBA fucking call team. I would make these weird observations as a fucking 8-year-old kid, Brian. I'm like, why are the black people explosive? Like, is there a fuse lit to them that I'm not fucking seeing? Like, you know what I'm saying? Like,
black explosiveness.
So I completely have some sympathy that a lot of people that I see at least don't have, and something wrong for that. I'm not trying to open that argument. I'm just stating that I have sensibilities for these guys on both sides, but I shouldn't have to defend myself this much. But I am, but, you know, I shouldn't have to defend myself this much, I guess I should say, is because if you look at my work on fucking mixedmartialarts.com, not only have I picked against these fighters, but you'll see, I do the fucking homework. In my opinions, I will stand by them. They're unabashedly mine, but they're also backed by facts, my friend. So before we get into this highly potent, controversial thing, I wanted to state that.
Do I have to give a disclaimer?
And you can give a disclaimer right now, actually. So that's my disclaimer before I get into my opinion on that.
No disclaimer.
No disclaimer. I'll
pull the Bill Burr card and say, what are you going to do? You're gonna make me stop doing comedy at strip malls?
On that note, people's opinions were volatile, and even though mine was a bit emotional, I was at least admitted the whole time, which I guess this is the last disclaimer because I'm about to hand it over to Brian here, is that I said on my Twitter, and it's funny, people, again, I get it. It's impossible to argue with certain people at Twitter at certain points. I'm not trying to argue with anybody ever, especially not tonight, but I will reiterate the point that I stated multiple times. Again, I need to rewatch this. I need to look at hard stats, even though I'm one of the people that say that y'all look at stats too much. They can be very misleading. They do play a role, and I do need to incorporate that role into my formal opinion.
In a very low action fight.
Yes, in a very low action fight, but I'm just seeing so many arguments on here. So let me first, before we get into any of our opinions, as passionate as they may or may not be, the robbery talk or the for sure one guy, the other talk needs to stop. I hate this fucking red team versus blue team mentality. It's ridiculous. And especially people in our country who have to suffer through this last election, no matter what side
my
you're
team,
on.
Your team.
Yes, you're sick of it. We need to be fucking hold ourselves to higher standards. And that. Credit. You want to credit yourself as an intelligent, sensible human being that wants to take seriously? Well, start now and try to start seeing both opinions and all arguments not in life. Forget the meaningless ones like fucking Woodley versus Thompson, which is fucking meaningless. By the way, for any of y'all to be getting upset at this. That being said, all that bullshit out of the way, you savages. Brian, what was your opinion on that?
Dude, Thompson 4-1.
4-1, okay.
I think that fifth round based on damage, two knockdowns, possibly three knockdowns. But that's the only damage he did. Outside of the takedown in the third round, if I'm correct, all he landed was a couple ground-and-pound shots. You're right. They were clean shots because his hand was pinned. But what else did he do? Thompson controlled the momentum of the fight. He controlled the octagon. He controlled the pace. Everything was him. Woodley threw nothing but right hands. I mean, there was a moment where I joked. It was like, you know, what Woodley's thrown 8 right hands and 3 leg kicks. That's about all that's happened. So I think as a champion, there's this stigma of you've got to do more than just win a decision to win a decision against a champion. There's that kind of with the judges. But this was so different. He didn't do anything.
Mm-hmm.
And in my opinion, I think that Tyron Woodley is honestly the most unimpressive UFC champion that's ever been. And not only his rise to championship, but it's his I deserve this mentality and he's demanding respect and yet this is the performance he's giving us. A draw, and then a very terrible decision. In my opinion, one of the worst decisions I've seen in MMA, and I'm not even trying to start that argument, but that's just my opinion.
Well, Brian, aside from your German last name, that's a racist, sir. Oh, no, I'm just kidding. Yeah, between your last name...
Las Vegas, it's the melting pot of the world.
So between your last name and that opinion, sir, no, all seriousness, no. I saw people that didn't have... You know, again, this is, I'm drawing from Twitter, but for what it's worth, I saw people that actually didn't have far off opinions as Brian's. For example, I did put a tweet out there that said, you know, which I thought was more of a fair tweet because not only was it more fair, but it was an open ended question. It wasn't a statement. I wasn't stating some 100% fact, but I said that might have been the most unimpressive 5-round distance title defense, or not unimpressive, but because unimpressive, you're more than fair to have that opinion, and I would be more than fair to have that opinion too, but I actually didn't word it unimpressive. I worded it as inactive. I specifically used that word, and I said this might be the most inactive, successful 5-round title defense. So, title defenses that were inactive, that were defended by 5-round decisions, essentially is what I just said, and people kept pointing out Leyda Silva and Leyda Maia, which is funny because like the most action-packed greatest fighter of all time ended up being on people's list for most inactive, you know, list. Which that's ironic in itself, but I will give those credit. Those were good things. Another shout out to my man at John's Crazy Life there. He brought up the Selvaladas, and so did another gentleman. So, you know, fair enough, but still not a lot of examples out there, right? And before I give you my card and the reason why, I guess I'll set this. The judges scored it, all three. I guess they gave Woodley rounds 2, 3, and 5. And the draw card was, I believe, giving Woodley a 10-8 in the round 5, which was the arguable 10-8, even though Miyu didn't give it a 10-8. That was the arguable 10-8, though. It was at least arguable. Okay, sure. So, in other words, the judges that scored it for Woodley Maybe this was wrong on the tweet that I saw. I'm sure y'all be the first to correct me on Twitter. But in other words, aside from the one draw scorecard, the other two judges not only saw it for Woodley, right? But they saw it for the second round. Now, I haven't seen hard stat facts, but apparently the strikes and stats were even on the second round. So it comes down to your scoring criteria and much more subjective opinions when the stats are even. So what people are pointing to, like octagon control, which is the reason why I scored, now kind of pulling into my scorecard, why I scored it not 49-46 like Brian, but I did score it for Thompson in a 48-47. I felt that even though I wouldn't have given it, there's an argument to not give that third round to Woodley based on the takedown, which I'll get to in a second. I felt that most judges would have given it to him, so I kind of accounted for that and kind of, you know, made the buffer of, you know, you hear the saying, giving the benefit of the doubt. I guess that was my version of giving the benefit of the doubt. So I ended up pulling the trigger and giving Woodley the third round, whereas Brian didn't. No wrong answer there. They're just the different opinions, even though we had the same winner. And even then, when you have disagreement on a 10-8 in the fifth or giving the third round, when you have two different decisions there, we're still talking about a one-point difference. So if we're playing the odds, that 48-47 was not only the scores that I saw the majority of Twitter throw out there for Thompson, mind you, but also, argumentatively, the safe decision of 48-47 Thompson, right?
Definitely.
Okay. I'm, granted, this is kind of confirmation bias. I'm confirming with a guy who's my friend and we watch the fights together. I get it. But gotcha. I'm also citing Twitter shit out here, people, okay? For whatever that the fuck that's worth. And the reason why, I'll get to the fifth round, but first the third round. Second round, I have to rewatch. I'll be honest. If the stats were accurate, ooh, I gotta be honest. I thought the first leg kicks. Yeah. We'll just go real beginning. I'll keep this as short and brief. First two rounds, inactive for Thompson, which I'll touch and kind of capstone my point at the end of this. But still, I thought he landed more shots, was more effective, shut Woodley down, and Woodley actually looked dejected after those first couple rounds. Even the third round where, you know, he arguably won and had the most success. And I'll get to my point on that in a second. Either way, I scored the first two for Thompson because he was doing what I predicted. He went to southpaw, and like I said, from the Rory McDonald fight, how he tried to imitate the Rory McDonald Woodley in the first one, I figured he would try to imitate himself like he should have been doing. He should have been imitating Rory in the first fight in the first place, and I figured he was going to imitate himself in the Rory fight, use the southpaw stance, keep the outside foot awareness to shut down any jabs or crosses, and that's what the fuck he did. So I gave him those first two rounds. The third round, you could argue. I love that Woodley committed. He didn't just give up. You want to criticize Woodley as a quitter, this, that? No. He had to wrestle hard for that takedown, and I love the adjustment. And he really put force by really kind of getting that outside trip and pushing to the takedown. Beautiful stuff. Not only from the outside trip, went right to one of my favorites, a behind-the-back seatbelt grip.
Yeah.
That even though he wasn't effective and had to fight, and most of the battle wasn't Woodley winning shots, it was them fighting for that seatbelt grip. He gained it eventually, but then would lose it, would try to fight it for it back, but then lose eventually the whole battle, and Wonderboy would eventually get up. But my problem is that was only a small part of the round, and I have to go get back and get an exact time, but I believe about right when the last minute came up, Wonderboy was already on his way up. He kind of was halfway there, and Woodley rebroke him down from the turtle. Credit to Woodley. But he got halfway up by about at least, I want to say, the last minute. And I want to say Wonderboy maybe controlled him and that whole battle was taking on for maybe only 2 minutes. Could it be more? I got to rewatch.
Yeah.
But I want to say off the top of my head, off of one watch, Wonderboy controlled maybe, Woodley controlled maybe 2 of those minutes on the ground. That being said, okay, everybody gives Woodley in the first fight for his ground control then, right? Well, guess what, guys? Woodley controlled him longer than this fight, which makes the argument on why you could maybe give it to Thompson. Although, again, I gave it to Woodley. Playing devil's advocate here. Fucking relax, y'all. Open your minds. Again, I gave it to Woodley, but that's the argument because Woodley didn't control him as much as that first fight, that first round. Because this is essentially the same fight, in other words. Woodley gets one round strong from wrestling and one round strong from strikes almost finishing, right?
Yep.
Okay, so now comparing the wrestling to the wrestling is what I'm saying. He didn't control him as much. And he didn't do as much damage. Now, even though he didn't do as much damage, Woodley actually might have landed technically more strikes, even though they weren't as hard, because even though Woodley did that damage and had that control time in the first one, if you watch, nothing fucking happens. Woodley barely throws a single shot for 90% of the first part of that control time. It's not until Wonderboy makes space, like I thought he would, that Woodley hits him. And now you kind of see why Wonderboy was hesitant in that first fight to make space, because as soon as he made space, what happened? He went to make space like 12 seconds left, which was stupid. Like, you already lost the round. You might as well stay on the bottom. I'm talking about their first fight, by the way. Yeah. You might as well stay on the bottom, Wonderboy. But he makes space, and then he gets hit with two shots. One of them cuts the eye. So it makes that...
It was the nose.
Yeah, the nose. Yeah, the nose. Sorry, the nose. So even though it was damaged, it was justified, and I scored that round for Woodley.
It was a lot of blood, too.
It was also one of those things where it was like, well, he kind of just held him there and only really landed two shots.
There's a two-way. But it was a great elbow.
It was a great elbow. Again, I scored that round for Woodley as well as the ground control in this fight for Woodley. Yeah. But again, you see where the argument even in that fight, and that fight arguably had a much more stronger, you know, argument than this fight for that ground control. Nevertheless, I still gave that round to Woodley. So before you fucking put your fiery stakes down, y'all, you savages.
Take your fire.
You one side or the other, motherfuckers. Ass. No, just kidding. I love y'all. But seriously, no. That, you know, that's a fair argument. That said, I scored it for Woodley, as seems like did a lot of people, even though I did see a lot of people advocate that said it wasn't enough, which was cool to see. A lot of people, you know, being ballsy and just fucking standing by opinions and not going the typical thing, like, take down the round. Because guess what? The sport evolves, and so should we.
Have it more often nowadays.
Yep. And even when the judges...
There's this shift in that. The judges are kind of aware. But it depends on where.
Yeah, it depends on where, exactly. We go to the fourth round. My memory's not the best, but that was another kind of inactive round. Thompson could have, arguably done more, which we'll definitely get to the point of Thompson couldn't be able to do more. We'll get to that point soon. But it seemed like most people on Twitter scored the fourth round for Thompson. Again, I have to rewatch. Don't hold me to the fire, because I'm not holding myself to you. You can hold me to the fire if you want, but whatever.
Yeah.
Fifth round, okay? Now, fifth round, we get close. The reason why I didn't score this is 10-8, Brian, because the part he hurt Woodley, he came closest to finishing the fight. Yes. But guys, let's go back through MMA. UFC, non-UFC. You know how much decisions we'd be overturning for guys that almost won the fucking fight? You know? And then now
Diego Sanchez, yeah. Uppercutting.
Well, let's take the Diego Sanchez and the controversial decisions out of it. Let's take the clear decisions where guys clearly won 2-1, Brian, or clearly won 3-2 or 4-1, and you're relegated 3-5 round fights. If one fighter won majority of a 3 or 5 round fight, but one fighter comes fucking closest to finish, you know what I'm saying? Did they win the fight? Right. No. And I get waving the flag. That was part of the reason why I get waving. Not only do I get waving the flag, that was part of the reason why I favored Woodley leading into the second fight, because he did come closest. I don't blame anybody for thinking that. True. That's not crazy at all. Well, this is a close fight, okay? Like, I was not confident in my Thompson pick.
I rewatched it. He won the first
fight. And that's fair opinion, but I'm just saying that coming close to finishing a fight isn't end-all, be-all. And, like, not only does that not reverse decisions factually, which you don't need me, obviously, to tell you that, but it's almost hypocritical, because how many arguments do we hear people going back and going revisionist history? Yeah, but if this was a street fight, that guy almost won. It's so rare. I mean, there has to be, like, close finishes and, like, bad judges' calls to where they stop the action before a guy could have gotten finished or some shit for that legitimate argument to fucking take place, okay? The fact is that even though I agree that maybe this isn't the best example, because Dan Henderson versus Michael Bisping 2 wasn't the best scored round, you know, fight, but if what Dan Henderson did to fucking Michael Bisping wasn't enough for a 10-8 round, neither should this. And that's not just subjective opinion. I'm basing that opinion on first, Jeopardy time. What is Jeopardy time? The amount of time where we were going, oh shit. The Jeopardy time that Stephen Thompson was in Jeopardy, he was definitely in Jeopardy. You're not getting that argument from me that he wasn't. But that Jeopardy time was a lot lesser than that fight. I'm not holding this fight to the argument. Perhaps it's not the best argument. But for relevant history that was nearby, that's a really good example, right? UFC 208, Bisping versus Henderson 2. And it was less damage time. I gotta see the stats again, people, but I believe it was less strikes. Yeah. It was less physical damage from cuts and less... what I interpret as physical damage from visual as far as woozy guy on the feet. Wonderboy was able to recover from wooziness. He didn't stumble and get back to his feet against Woodley, of all people, who is underrated grappler and underrated control, mind you. So for that reason, I argue that it wasn't a 10-8. But again, if you want to give...
No way was it a 10-8.
Again, if you want to give Woodley the third round or not, or if you want to give a 10-8 or not, I would say, okay, well, it's probably going to be a 48-47 Thompson or a draw. Whereas the last fight, I was like, okay, even though you're opposite on this, and respectfully so, I was initially too, I could also see the argument for the first fight where it was opposite. It was either a draw or a 48-47 Woodley. You know, there's plenty of arguments out there in different scorecards, granted. I'm not trying to hold anybody to the fire for it. I'm just saying there are legitimate arguments and angles for the fifth and third. This red team versus blue team bullshit needs to stop. It's hard enough that we follow this sport like MMA and we dedicate our time to it. It's hard enough that the judging is incompetent. But to tear apart each other in the community over this
why we follow
either or bullshit.
It's because it isn't true. My team versus your team. True. It's yeah, we have our favorite fighters, but like we said, with Mark Hunt, he got destroyed by Overeem. One of the most gut-wrenching KOs I've seen of one of my favorite fighters. But I respect the fact
absolutely
that he came in there, got rocked, recovered, and beat him. And that's MMA. It's
yes.
not like,
yes.
I can't believe the Steelers beat my team. It's not that. But you're right. We do, in some ways, create these arguments that put us in those boats. But I feel like as MMA fans, that's part of the appeal of being an MMA fan.
I agree, man. It is. And even the negative, or not negative, but could be perceived as negative depending on your personality. Like I'm saying, I don't necessarily like the arguments or the red team versus blue team. Even that in itself, we still have to appreciate whether we like it or not, because that's kind of what makes the sports fun. It is fun to argue. So even though, again, you heard the warning, we've been drinking, this probably explains my passion, all that stuff. But honestly, honestly, guys, even if you want to say you like Michael Bay or you disagree with the score, I still got love for you in some part of my heart because that's what this is all about. It's engaging and having fun. And as I would hope you can tell, even when I am passionate like this, y'all should be able to tell. It takes a lot to offend me and it takes a lot for me to take anything in this world personal.
So send
personal,
all the
so.
Michael Bay tweets to
oh,
the
fuck
mixed
that.
Martial analyst.
Fuck that. Fuck that. Downvote IMDb.
Do
let
it.
The war begin. No, just kidding. But yeah, anyway, so Brian, again, to kind of end the argument, 49-46 Thompson was your score, sir?
Sure.
48-47 was mine. Neither right, neither wrong. This is not a robbery either way, but for people to say that it was 100% Thompson and not Woodley, or 100% Woodley and not Thompson, y'all are stupid either way.
Well,
I guess I don't care.
Stupid because I'm saying 100%
okay, maybe.
Thompson.
Well, maybe then. Okay,
I'll fall into that boat. No, I'll wear that proudly, dude. It's
again, cool. That's what makes our sport
like I
good.
Said, all I am
well,
is an opinion.
Here's the more important point, though, my friend, of that. I guess what I was trying to say, the more rounder point, is that, for example, one of the arguments I heard was that Thompson didn't do enough to take the title. Now, regardless of whether or not you want that bullshit, whether or not you feel that bullshit's right or far, that stupid rule of, oh, the champion should get the round if it's a close round because it's the champion. Like,
that's the stigma.
And that's tough, and I don't agree with that, but I can't, you know, I guess I can't, you know, fault you, although I'd hope the judges would hold himself to a little bit of better of a standard, and I would hope our judges are a little more educated. I know, I'm swinging for the fences, this is MMA judging, but... That being said, y'all need to remember, even if that argument is valid, let's just say that argument is valid. Well, guess what? It's a valid two-way street.
You're
that's right.
And, I've only drunkenly watched this fight once.
Yes.
And I'll be honest, there's a slight bias, but you know.
No, and again, we're being honest here. But again, it's back to that red team versus blue team bullshit. Like, oh, Thompson didn't do enough? Well, yeah, we didn't accept the unified rules of MMA in Las Vegas here for this one, guys. I don't agree with that, but that's what the rules they were judged off of. And when it comes to what we've seen in the past as far as precedent set to the majority of the interpretation of the rules, although we can all, you know, interpret it differently, let's look at the majority of how fights have been scored, hence precedent. Octagon control means something whether you like it or not. And I saw people say, well... Yeah, well, octagon control is just one aspect, and it should be a small aspect. You know what? You're arguably right. In fact, the new rules would agree with you. But again, this wasn't the new rules. Octagon control plays a factor.
Yeah.
And guess who was the other fighter that wasn't throwing a lot other than Stephen Thompson? Which Stephen Thompson wasn't throwing a lot. But yes, the sitting champion. Guess what? As much as someone should earn, I agree. Someone needs to make a fucking statement. You want to be the new champion, you should make a statement. That's not how...
Do you want to be the champion, but do you want to be a champion who's demanding that respect?
Right, and I agree with that.
Legendary.
But it doesn't matter if I agree with that. It doesn't matter if you agree with that, Brian. Those aren't the fucking rules. This is judged round by round. So if you're going to say one guy, you know, the challenger's being inactive, if the champion is not only being inactive but succeeding octagon position by circling the back of the fence, but Woodley always circles to the back of the fence, does that mean he should win the fucking fight because he always circles back to the fence if he's not being effective? No. Yeah. I don't care if that's his style. I don't care if people underrate it, which I admittedly have underrated Woodley's style because he's really fucking good at funneling people into his style. That said, if he's not capitalizing on it until the fucking fifth round and he's not throwing, well, then guess what? That's a two-way criticism of being inactive because, yeah, Thompson could have definitely been inactive. I'm not arguing with that. In fact, I'm agreeing with y'all. Yeah. Thompson could have been and should have been in hindsight way more inactive. That was his Achilles heel. Yo, not arguing with you 1 second. But don't think for a second that that is not a two-way streeted argument for the sitting champion who has a lot to prove, who had not just a lot to prove from being a champion to keep his belt, he has a lot more at stake, but the narrative outside the cage, he had way, way more. Woodley had way more to lose and win, which is why, which was the one reason. You know, of course, I would have wanted it to be more definitive Woodley win, but the one reason I would have been happy with a Woodley win is because the dude, I'm sympathetic, like I said, to the battles the guy faces outside the octagon. Even if y'all aren't, that's cool. I'm definitely not trying to have that race argument, but I am sympathetic to the man. If you're, you know, making these claims and the UFC isn't pushing you enough, and like I even just said, I even agree with him to those stands from the way Rogan was calling him, etc. Again, I am sympathizing with Woodley more than a lot of people that even picked him to win this fight. So don't fucking throw that shit on me. But what I am saying is that, with all that said, he needed a definitive win that much more. And the travesty here, you know, the real travesty is not that, not if he scored it for Thompson and you think, you know, he didn't get the decision or he should have, which, by the way, again, no robbery in my book, even though I picked Thompson. The real travesty here is that all that bullshit that Woodley's facing and that racism and the not liking, whether people legitimately criticize his style, whether people legitimately just have their opinion and don't like him, or, yes, the ignorant people who are just dumb racists out there, that's the shitty part, is all those people are still going to have strong criticisms for Woodley after this. And that's why I'm kind of being careful that even though I felt strong like Brian did the Thompson won, I'm really trying to remind people to temper their arguments either way. Because the backlash goes, just like the argument of activity, well, the backlash for this decision goes both ways. And it's unfair because both these guys are amazing fighters. So I guess I'll close on that. I don't think that was too politically correct at all. I think that was straight up my opinion. And I stand by that. My opinion will change when I rewatch the fight. But as far as genuinely supporting both guys and genuinely, you know, preaching to y'all to temper your arguments and the red team versus blue team shit and just kind of, you know, raise the level. We want the sport to raise its level. We got to raise our level as fans, as me, as media, as everybody. We always got to improve. So I won't look to improve on this drunken shit show. But Brian, yeah. Do you have any last words on this fight before we close up shop?
Tweet me your rage at BR14N, and we can discuss this further if you disagree with my statements on Woodley. But my opinion on Woodley and why I said he was an unimpressive champion is because I'm going to compare it to McGregor. Look at McGregor. If McGregor ran his mouth like McGregor was running his mouth, claiming that he'll be the greatest of all time, a two-time champion, well before it ever happened, if he would have had any performance close to what Woodley has put on, minus his win over Lawler, people would talk so much shit about McGregor for that. And that is my opinion on Woodley. It has nothing to do with what he's faced outside of the octagon. It's what he brings to the face of it when he says, I'm going to show up in New York and I am going to put on a legendary performance. Then he's going to almost win a decision and it's going to go to a draw. And then he's going to complain about how he's not getting the respect he deserves.
And the argument to how he got to the tail shot in the first place.
It's just the argument of how he is talking it and not performing it. It has nothing to do with anything outside of that.
So his personality
is fine. It's just the way he translates his shit talk and is complaining about how he's treated, yet this is how he performs in the game of MMA.
In other words, Brian's kind of basing his on paper, in other words, not letting personal feelings,
absolutely,
good or bad, get in the way of that there. That's fair.
Just again, giving a different comparison as to why there is a common dislike against Woodley from some people out there.
And again, I think you should like both these guys. Again, I don't think it's a robbery either way.
He's a crazy athletic guy.
But this is how it should be. We should be able, Brian should be able to voice his opinion. I should be able to voice mine.
Absolutely.
Whether as overly passionate as jokingly I can be sometimes.
I have a lot of opinions on a lot of fighters similar to Woodley, and that's just right. how it is.
Or you or my buddy aforementioned John, being kind of, bold with your opinions. I respect that. What, people? Y'all don't have to agree with opinions to respect them, but if we can, put them forward in a respectable way, well, then we can kind of have some conversations and be educated people, quote unquote. So that's all I'll say on that.
No, it's getting late.
Yeah, it's getting late. Let's wrap it up. I was going to do this. This is going to use the submissions in transition, but a lot of y'all had a lot of opinions, but not a lot of people use the hashtag Protect Your Neck Podcast. And a lot of those opinions were kind of stuff we were talking. We've kind of already parlayed through whether we actually gave y'all for the credit by name or voiced the opinion. So I'm going to go ahead and skip that point. And not just to be lazy, there's a justified reason for that, like I just said. But more importantly, I'll just take this opportunity before we get out of here, Brian, just give shout-outs for this week. Oh, aside from friends like yourself who has supported my dumb ass, which I don't know why, which I appreciate, by the way. But again, shout-out to, first and foremost, the original OGs, MMA Junkie George and Goes, and Danny Yoker is the producer there at SiriusXM. One of the longest everyday MMA shows where they have rapport with the fighters, great stories, and a people's champion on MMA shows because it's the most interactive caller show. So go check them out.
Nice.
Give them positive ratings and reviews. Thank you at MMA Kelton for having me on your show to chop things up with you, and at Rockstar Z. Both dudes who I've seen around and have been doing their hustle and grind. And again, whether you agree or not, you got to respect the hard work. You got to respect the passion. I respect both of those dudes, and you should add them to your reference list if you're looking for that sort of thing. If you're an MMA degenerate, follow them, subscribe to their channels. Thanks, guys, for having me on. Thank you all for your positive feedback. Speaking of the Junkie Nation people, it's great seeing my man. Special shout out to John Rico, because I forgot him in the original post, which I did self-admittedly edit in the combat chat there. We had a great lunch with Jim Edwards. Who, shout out to Jim Edwards. Sorry, there's gonna be a lot of shout outs here, as my girlfriend likes to say I do when I've been drinking. Y'all know that Jim's been one of the best people to me in this industry. You may see him as the breaking news guy with the massive followers and this and that. It gets easy to just be looked at as an image, but I know the person behind said image.
Very polite Englishman.
Yes, he's a genuinely good dude. You'll have to meet him soon, because y'all are some of my best friends, and Jim been nothing but good to me. So shout out to you, sir. It was great having lunch with you. The aforementioned John Rico. Danny Austin, one of the best Canadian. I know I love all Canadians, so it's hard to say this. I don't want to be like a trope, because then it just feels like my Canadian love is disingenuous. It's just that. It's the opposite. My Canadian love is ridiculously high. I love guys like James Lynch, who is the truth with his video breakdowns. But I'm actually talking about, as they say on the MMA Roadshow, favorite Canadian journalist, Danny Austin, which I had a fun lunch with him. Speaking of the MMA Roadshow and John Morgan, which I was on the show with the Gemma Q Radio, shout out to him. It was nice to have beers with him, Mike Bond, and Danny Austin. Although that was not the official night of the Roadshow, we had our own Roadshow at Dino's. A spot you know well, sir.
Oh,
that's
Jesus.
Yeah, I did those. Oh, the PBR is fucking. I never drink PBR, but they got that damn free PBR game. So
free PBR game.
Well, between the free PBR game, you have to guess. Is it which suit of cards? Spades, clubs, hearts, or whatever. So you have a 1 in 4 chance of getting a free beer.
I know exactly what you're talking about.
Between that.
Real late.
Yeah, between that and I'm going to blame fucking John Morgan drinking with him, I got fucked up that night. But it was fun.
You're quite the lightweight, though, Dan. It doesn't take much.
It doesn't. And especially when I'm on an empty stomach.
After 4 beers.
Especially when working my ass off and driving around all week. And the night after that, just parlaying to the shout-outs here, was the MMA Awards. It was, again, great meeting Luke Thomas. Great meeting in person, finally, Kareem Zidane. Really follow his work. Really love his stuff as a history Russian MMA fan and MMA fan and history nut. Follow Kareem's work. It was great meeting him. Great meeting so many people. More than enough to mention, but I will mention the Junkies. Kendra, Mike, a.k.a. Northern Lights. Jason Ford, a.k.a. Bill Cosby for, saying you'll get me one whiskey neat, because that's how men drink it. And then I have to live up to that moniker of being a man, because the motherfucker comes back with 2 doubles. So I'm drinking 4 heavy shots when I only asked for 1. I was fucked up the rest of that night, and I don't remember much of it. So thank you for that, Ford. Thank Vegas, you all. Baby. Yes, Vegas, baby, indeed. So thank you, everybody, for Emilius. Thank you, everybody, from Flow Combat. Congratulations on the nominations. Congratulations on those who won the MMA awards, if that's your thing you're into. I just went for fun. It was fun. It was an honor to be a part of, getting classy. Probably forgot a bunch of you on the shout-out. So sorry if I did. Brian, where can they find you on Twitter before we go, my friend?
BR14N.
All right, find me at the MM Analyst for all my future work. Follow the podcast at the PYN Podcast. Use hashtag Protect Your Neck Podcast. Submit your top five lists, hot tags, post fight, or questions pre or post card. We will answer them in show. Hope you didn't take us too seriously, but I hope you did take the message of, you know, not getting in, you know, too heavily involved in this team versus team thing here. I don't care if I sound like a fucking hippie. We all need to fucking get along, appreciate ourselves, but we all just need to laugh at each other too. So go ahead and feel free to talk shit to me. I won't get offended. That being said, as much as I preach the hippie shit, I love the talking about the MMA, baby. And that's what this place is for. So until next time, protect your neck.